Okay, hi, thanks. I'll be talking about how we can understand how coherent structures emerge in homogeneously forced turbulence in various settings. And this is a work that I've been doing the past years in collaboration with Brian Farrell, Petros Ioannou, Nikos Bakas, and Marios at the University of Athens. Brian's here at Harvard. Part of it is my thesis. So let's get going. So as we know, geophysical flows are often seen to organize into large-scale coherent structures, and most of the energy of the flow is found to be in these kind of structures, like the Jovian jets or the Earth's mid-latitude polar jet stream. And what is striking is that these structures are not in the largest allowed scale of the flow, but they are in a particular scale and they have a particular structure. And this is what I will try to explain, how these kind of structures emerge and how they maintain in turbulent flows. Also, if you go away from geophysical flows, I mean from planetary scale flows, and you look in the boundary layer of the Earth, there are these experiments done by Hatzkins and Maruzic in Salt Lake City, where they do measurements in the boundary layer and they find these very long, streaky structures. And these have a particular width and a particular length, and they are very persistent. And understanding how these structures also form is another question. And also, if you go to channel flows, as we've been hearing the past few days, you see these roll and streak structures in the wall region and in the log layer. Also, in this example, you can see a high and a low speed streak in the middle of the channel. This is the flow when I remove the span-wise and stream-wise instantaneous mean. So the problem we want to address is how all these structures emerge, and can we make a predictive theory to predict what kind of structure will emerge in at each case. So I'll make some claims, and hopefully I'll try to convince you by the end of the talk that they are true. My first claim is that the underlying dynamics for structure formation lies essentially in the interaction between the mean of the mean flows and the turbulent eddies. And it is often this procedure of structure formation does not have an analytic form in the Navier-Stokes equation or in the equation of motion in each geophysical setting, but it only has an analytic expression if you go and study the statistical state dynamics, as I call it. That is the dynamics that evolve the statistics, or how I think this is exactly what DSS Tobias was calling on Monday. And I think if there was an acronym police, I mean, they would be starting to come into this room. Yeah, in fact, I just realized this morning when I wrote this. Yes, that the one is a permutation of the other. And now, because of claim one, often a second order closure of the full hierarchy of statistical state dynamics is adequate to capture structure formation. Okay, these are my three basic claims. Now, what is SSD, statistical state dynamics, or direct statistical simulation? You split the flow into a mean and then deviations from the mean. Mean I will denote with angle brackets. And then you form the hierarchy of same time statistical cumulants or statistical moments. We have the first cumulant, the second, the third, and so on. And then you find how each of these cumulants evolve in time. You can find the evolution equation for each of these cumulants. And this is well known. The first cumulon evolves, and it's it depends on the first cumulon and the second. The second depends on the first, second, and the third, and so on and so on. And if you go back to the claim three that I make, if you do a second order closure, it's like throwing away everything from order three and above. And this is what I call S3T, another acronym coming into the room, Statistical Stochastic Structural Stability Theory, or what Tobias was calling on Monday CE2, cumulon expansion of second order. Now, let's make some remarks here. What is new here? Because these equations have been written down since the 50s or even earlier. Now, usually, people inspired and thinking of a problem of homogeneous anisotropic turbulence assume that the first cumulon is zero. Now, if you assume that, the first equation goes away. And mind you, I am claiming that the essential dynamics of structure formation, of this coherent structure formation, are in exactly in this first equation. And what else was being usually done is that people were not interested about the dynamics of the statistics. They were trying to understand how to find the statistics at equilibrium. So they were setting the left-hand side equal to zero and trying to find what will be the equilibrium second-order statistics and third-order statistics in homogeneous isotropic turbulence. Now, I'll keep the dynamics, and I'm arguing that by studying the dynamics of the statistics, and also I'll keep the first moment, the first cumulant, and I'm arguing that by studying the dynamics of the statistics, new phenomena arise that are not present or are usually obscured in single flow realizations in the dynamics of Navier-Stokes or barotropic QG dynamics or any dynamics that characterize the QG flows, geophysical flows. Now, I'll show two applications of this technique. I'll first address the problem of jet or large-scale wave emergence in planetary turbulence. And I'll also address the problem of formation of roll streak structures in pre-transitional quet turbulence. And I'll show that these things can be predicted as an instability of the statistical state dynamics. Now, let's go with the first problem. Now, this is my world. This is my reality for studying, large-scale jets in the atmosphere of the Earth or Jupiter. I'll consider barotropic 2D quasi-geostrophic flows on a beta plane. Zeta is the vorticity. The flow being 2D and incompressible, everything can be described in terms of a stream function or in terms of the vorticity. Vorticity is just the Laplacian of the stream function. My x direction is in the zonal direction or along latitudes. My y is in the meridional. And being 2D, the dynamics cannot self-sustain turbulence, so I have to inject energy through some kind of forcing. And this is psi there, and I put a linear dissipation so as to have an equilibrated state. So my forcing, I'll take it wide in time and with a statistically homogeneous, and it will inject the structures at a length scale much smaller than the domain. And this is one example of what kind of forcing realizations it could be. I take, for example, you can take it to be isotropic or whatever. In this case, I will take it to be this meridionally elongated structures modeling Baroclinic instability. Yes?
Hi. Presumably, you're going to define that mean for us, that it's not a temporal mean. Otherwise, those terms would be zero.
I don't understand what you...
Okay, you've got angle brackets up there that are a mean.
Yeah, I will define,
that. Are you going to define it for us?
The force?
For us. Sorry.
Yeah.
John Gibson, New Hampshire.
Yeah, for you, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's start over. Okay, so we'll see the definition of the mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, but it will be a zonal average for this problem. The stream wide mean. Oh my goodness. What is this? You know, this never happened.
That was.
You know. Yeah, but why it appeared in the projector? Anyway, yes, you can think of the mean in this problem as a stream-wise average. Okay, I'll come up to it later. So, now if you count all the parameters in the problem, there's beta, which is the planetary vorticity gradient. There's the linear dissipation rate. There's the energy injection rate by the forcing and the scale of the forcing, which is 1 over kf. Kf is the wave number of the forcing. And you can gather them around and combine and make two non-dimensional parameters that will control the flow. One is a non-dimensional energy injection rate, and one is a non-dimensional planetary vorticity. Yes, there's one question, but.
Denise Game, Johns Hopkins. Just following up on John's question, the way you define the covariance as being fixed in time,
yeah.
By definition, it can't be a temporal mean. Isn't that true?
No. Yeah, it's true. I'm sorry. It is true. The mean, it cannot be a temporal mean. Yes. Okay, because then we don't have any evolution. We don't have any dynamics. Okay? This is my world, and this I will try to understand. Now, this world, this barotropic vorticity equation in the beta plane, does show large-scale jet formation, and I'll show you a video. Now, let me pause it. I start from a state of rest, and I start injecting energy at those scales, so at time equals 0.001. This is a typical structure of the forcing. But as I let the flow evolve, you will see that the flow will organize itself and go away from that structure that I'm injecting. And we see here at the relative vorticity of the flow, and on the left, the zonally averaged zonal flow. And you see that very quickly, the flow organizes, all the blue color goes along in the same latitude, and all the red color goes along in the same latitude, and already we have three jets, as you can see, three eastward jets and three westward jets, and they have a particular structure. They are more pointed in the eastward direction, blunted in the westward direction, and they evolve much more slowly than the turbulence they are embedded in. And all these things, I'll try to understand why, how this homogeneously forced flow self-organizes to create this kind of mean flows. Now, let me show you another feature of this world that I'm living on for the next 5 minutes. Fix one of the non-dimensional parameters. Fix this planetary. Non-dimensional planetary vorticity gradient, and start increasing the energy injected by the forcing. Okay, don't change the structure of the forcing, just increase the amplitude. So for low values, you will find that at steady state, this is a snapshot of the stream function at steady state, you have a homogeneous flow, a flow that more or less is everywhere the same, and if you zonally average, you find zero. Now for a bit larger values of the energy input rate, you see that the flow departs from homogeneity. You see these very long, elongated in X structures, but still, if you average instantaneously over each latitude, you get more or less zero. And at higher energy injection rates, you get four jets, for example. And the video was even higher values, we get three jets. Okay, so this suggests that there is some kind of transition as energy is increased, and this transition I will identify, and I will characterize this transition in the same manner as a phase transition in solid states. So So coming back to John's question, for this problem, take my mean to be a zonal mean along latitude circles. And if we make the ergodic assumption and assume that the mean is also the same as ensample mean over forcing realizations, then we can go on and write the evolution of the SSD, of the second order closure of the statistical state dynamics. Okay, and here it is. So here, this is the equations for evolving the first two statistical moments. John,
so
yes.
John Gibson, New Hampshire. That mean, does that mean have boundaries on it?
I forgot to tell you, I take my flow to be periodic in both directions.
Okay, and so the mean is over the whole the entire space.
Yes, but it's only a zonal mean, not a domain average mean.
It's averaging over one of the directions.
Over X.
Okay.
Over X. So there is structure in Y. There is structure in the meridional. So the mean flow can have structure in the meridional, and this can be one of the such mean flows. Yes. Microphone.
Sorry, Carlo Corso, CNRS MFT. Could you specify more? What does it mean? Ensemble average, and mean, because now you do a zonal mean, no? Usually the ergodic theory is like in time and then...
Yeah, and sample averages, all these flows are stochastically forced. If you assume that if you have an infinite ensemble of flows with different forcing realizations and you do the average of that, then this will be equal as the zonal average. This is what I mean. And sample.
Sorry, different. How do you differentiate
different
forcing?
The forcing is stochastic. It's wide in time.
Yeah, okay.
So different forcing realizations.
Okay. Thanks.
Coming from a different random number generator each time. This is what I mean. Forcing realizations.
Greg Cheney, New Hampshire. But yeah. I would just follow up his question. If you happen to force deterministically, then you could still proceed with the same machinery, just sticking with the zonal average.
Yes, and then you don't need a further assumption. Okay, I'll show that. Okay, I'll show that these equations. Where do I need this ensemble average? It's because here this Q term comes from the forcing, and this is only the spatial correlation of the forcing, and there is no time there because the forcing is assumed wide in time. So if you calculate the second order correlation of the forcing, then you only have this deterministic Q there that only depends on space. So there's another question. Yes.
In Johns Hopkins. But if you have deterministic forcing, then you can't do an ensemble to get this covariance.
You don't even need the ensemble. You just define your covariance. You'll define your mean as a zonal mean, and the perturbations are deviations from the zonal mean. And then your covariance will be all these angle brackets will be zonal means. Okay. Another question. I'm sorry. I probably confused you.
I'm Javier Jiménez from Madrid. I mean, what says your origin in Y? I mean, you're doing an ensemble average in over all your different forcings. The forcing can be here, there.
No. Okay, I shouldn't have met. Forget the ensemble average. I'm doing zonal average. Okay, my mean is zonal average. Okay, my mean is zonal average over X. Now, these are the equations when I neglect the third order cumulant and above. And the first equation you see is very similar to the barotropic vorticity equation, but now describing only the mean. And the term on the right-hand side, this R of C, is the Reynolds stresses that come from the perturbations. And the first equation is exact. Now, the second equation, if I didn't truncate at second order, it will have also a third order cumulant contribution, and then I would have to write the third equation for the third cumulant, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, but... The microphone.
My name is Predrag Cvitanović, Georgia Tech. Second equation looks like Lyapunov equation, but the A should be transpose, one of these guys.
Yeah. It's exactly that. If you write it in matrix form, it's exactly the Lyapunov, the time-dependent Lyapunov equation. Yes, it is exactly. But this is a continuous space formally, so the variables, the two operators act on different variables. So one acts on rows and one acts on columns. So yes, you are right. Now, we have neglected the third order cumula, as I have said, and this is exactly equivalent as neglecting the eddy-eddy nonlinearity in the eddy equation. If I decompose my equations of motions into a mean and an eddy equation, and I neglected the eddy-eddy nonlinearity in the eddy equation, this is exactly equivalent as neglecting the third order cumula and above. And this is exactly what Tobias was calling the pain in the neck term. I really like that term. So this is my system. This is a nonlinear autonomous deterministic system now, and for the evolution of the statistics up to second order. It admits fixed point solutions being deterministic and autonomous, and the associated perturbation equations can help us study the stability of these fixed point solutions. Now, my fixed point now combines of both a mean flow and a second order statistics. Okay, and with this, we will understand this phase transition and the bifurcation. So how does these fixed point solutions, what kind of fixed point solutions we might have? We may have this, what I call the homogeneous equilibrium, and a fixed point solution with no mean flow at all, and homogeneous second order eddy statistics. Or we can have fixed point solutions with zonal mean flow that varies only in y, and inhomogeneous eddy statistics, which are homogeneous in the zonal direction and inhomogeneous in y. Now, I will, and if we perturb the S3T system, the system I was writing before, about this equilibria, we can do an eigenanalysis and study the stability of this equilibria. Now, this is I want to note that we now linearized about the turbulent state, about the first and second order statistics of the turbulent state, and we can study for the stability of a turbulent state with this formalism. And if we were going to do only just hydrodynamic stability, this is just a subset of the stability that we are going to do now. This is seeing the mean flow and perturbing the mean flow. This is hydrodynamic stability. What we now have, it's an interaction of the mean flow and the turbulent eddy statistics that give rise to new instabilities. Now, take the homogeneous equilibrium, the homogeneous turbulent equilibrium, and let's study stability and see if it becomes unstable and creates zonal jets, for example. Now, how does a state with no mean flow become unstable? This sounds counterintuitive because we are all used to Lord Rayleigh hydrodynamic stability. We have no flow. The eigenvalues are all negative. It's only dissipation, nothing. So we don't expect to find stability. But here, there is this new term that comes into the mean flow perturbation equation, the term that comes from a perturbation Rayleigh stresses. Now, so what's going on here? And what is the essence of the instability that's coming on here? Imagine the state with no mean flow and homogeneous turbulent eddies. If you calculate the Reynolds stresses from that, it will be exactly zero. Now imagine that you put a small infinitesimal mean flow perturbation. This is the dashed red line. So I introduce an infinitesimal inhomogeneity in the meridional direction. And I calculate the response of the turbulent second-order statistics. This will make the second-order statistics slightly inhomogeneous in Y. And then I come from there and I calculate the Reynolds stresses. And I plot them here on blue. And lo and behold, they are configured in such a way so as to reinforce the mean flow, the infinitesimal mean flow that I put in the first place. So this will, this interaction of the mean flow with the stresses will create instability and will make the mean flow grow. Now, of course, I just put a random mean flow and I found the stresses. But if I search really hard and I crank down the eigenanalysis, I can find a particular form of the mean flow that when I put it, the Reynolds stresses come out in the same exact form. And that's an eigenfunction of my system. OK, and we can do that analytically. In this case, we can even do it analytically. And we can predict the growth rates and the unstable eigenfunctions of the homogeneous turbulent state. And here I show you the bifurcation diagram. So what I plot in red, in black, is results from the nonlinear equations of motion, from a barotropic vorticity equation. I measure in the y-axis the fraction of energy that is found in zonal jets. And I start varying my energy input rate. And as you remember, when this was very small, there was no jets at all. But as I cross a threshold, I start seeing zonal jets. And I start, eventually, I have most of my energy found in zonal jets. Now, I take this homogeneous equilibrium state and I put it into my statistical state dynamics. And I do perturbations about it. I crank the mechanism. And I predict that this is the critical value for which stability should happen. And this is quite amazing. But not only that, this is just from the stability analysis. Now I have my full second order statistical state dynamics, and I can evolve that. And I can evolve and predict the final amplitude states that will arise after the instability occurs. And this is exactly the blue line. So the blue line is my prediction, and the black line is the numerical experiments from the full nonlinear quasi-geostrophic barotropic vorticity equation. And not only I can predict the amplitude of the flows, because from the stability analysis we can predict the most unstable eigenfunction, we can predict what kind of flows, what the structure of the flow that will emerge. And for example, if we go at this case on the left, which is just above the critical point, I predict that the most unstable eigenfunction will have a six-jet structure. And I evolve my statistical state dynamics, and I see this six-jet structure emerging and equilibrated at finite amplitude. And then I go and do the same experiment with the same parameters in my nonlinear barotropic vorticity equation, and I see reflections of this exact prediction. And if I am at way higher than the predicted critical point, I still predict that six jets will emerge, but the statistical state dynamics predict that these jets will emerge and I will have a finite amplitude state with four jets. And I do the nonlinear simulation and I find the reflection of this prediction also. And we can do much more. I just showed you one glimpse of what we can understand and do with this setting. Yes?
So, Greg Cheney, New Hampshire. So can you find in the second case on the right?
Yeah.
I mean, presumably, so you just set d by dt of your statistics to zero, and you can find these two types of equilibria that you had referenced. So you can find the ones with the jets.
Yeah.
So, but you can't predict the number of jets. Well, you find a family of solutions, in other words, with jets with different numbers in the given domain.
And you can predict each of these family, the stability of each of these family.
You could then examine the stability of that family, absolutely. But that's not yet what you're talking
about. No, here what I'm doing is what? I'm considering the homogeneous state. I find that this state is unstable, two, and with an eigenfunction for six jets. And then I put this eigenfunction, this instability, into my dynamics, and I evolve my dynamics, my full dynamics. And I can see 6Z emerging at first and then merging, and then I find a final state, which is an equilibrium of the dynamics. This is, again, a fixed point of the dynamics, this 4Z or this 6Z on the left.
But you would not have been able to predict that it was going to end up at 4?
Sometimes you can.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes you can. You can. Yeah, it's a whole other talk. Yeah. Okay.
Just a follow-up question. Brad Marston from Brown. Yeah. Is it possible to analytically extract the Rhine scale from the stability calculation or the final configuration?
You can extract the scale of the jet. Yes. You can extract the scale of the jets because you can see that it will have 4 jets or 3 jets or 5 jets, and you can vary beta or r, and then you can find different equilibria. Yes. So I only need 5 minutes. Okay. So let's do the same thing. Okay. I have the official 5 minutes left. Let's do the same thing to understand how these roll streak structures emerge in pre-transitional quad flow. And this is a result from a paper that is submitted in Fizeray Fluids by Brian, Ioannou, and Marios. So the usual setting, that setting that you are all most familiar with, plate quad flow, I just wrote, instead of writing the Navier-Stokes equations, I wrote them in a decomposing to a streamwise mean and the rest, dash means the rest. And I have forcing on my perturbation equation. Why? Because I am in Reynolds number pre-transition. So I want to model with the forcing the noise that Haskin and Maruzic have, for example, in their experiments in the Salt Lake. In Salt Lake. So it turns out that the same underlying principle holds. So as in the 2D problem, and an infinitesimal mean flow organized the Reynolds stresses in such a way so that it reinforced itself. In the 3D problem, we have the following. We take the plane quet, the quet flow equilibrium with homogeneous forcing, and we add an infinitesimal streak. Here you see the spanwise and wall direction. This is a streamwise mean. And you add an infinitesimal streamwise streak, red and blue denotes high and low speed streak. Now, this streak organizes the turbulence in such a way so that it produces a streamwise roll circulation, which is showed with the arrows, a streamwise mean roll circulation, which is configured in such a way so that it brings negative momentum from the bottom into the heart of the blue streak and positive momentum from the top into the heart of the red streak, so that it reinforces the streak and it makes the streak grow even larger. And if you crank the mechanism again, and you can crank harder because it's it's a 3D problem now, you can find the eigenfunctions and the eigenvalues of all this of this problem. And you can predict that the most unstable eigenfunction will be a state with two streaks for this problem, for example. And then you can compute again the bifurcation diagram. And black is the prediction of the statistical state dynamics of second order. This is the analytical prediction. And the red is a DNS simulation. DNS simulation and with the width of the pink error bars denote one standard deviation. I'm plotting here the maximum of the streak velocity. Now, if you instead of doing a DNS, you do an ensemble of perturbations and then of the perturbation equation and all at every instant force the mean equation by its average, then you find the blue curve. And you can see that it collapses to the second order closure prediction of the dynamics. So red is a DNS, blue is a DNS with 100 perturbation equations all forcing the same time the mean flow, and black is a second order closure. We neglected things, we throw things out of the window, and we can predict analytically this bifurcation structure. And
question before we go on, this is Rich Kurzel from Bristol. So when you say DNS, is that DNS with eddy-eddy's interactions thrown out?
It's a DNS in the usual DNS sense, everything inside, everything. Yeah. So, and if I mentioned, but all these are pre-transitional. Transition occurs at, I think, at a value near 6. So let me show you two simulations. The first is an S3T simulation, a simulation of the statistics that you can see this state of two roles emerging and then changing the Qwerty profile and making it going to this final absolute state. And if you do a DNS with everything inside, you can see reflections of the same thing. Of course, the DNS will not go to a fixed point. It will dance a little, but I mean, you know, it's the same thing, undoubtedly. So, with my conclusions, I think I should stop here and take questions.
So, questions.
It's a very nice talk. I am Carlo Corso from CNRS IMFT.
Hi.
Could you go back one slide or two slides?
Of
when
course.
You compare the DNS in Qwert,
this
curve. So I was wondering, so you say what the DNS, you plot the maximum amplitude of the streak, so the red line, versus the amplitude of the forcing.
But
you're in Qwert flow at the Reynolds number 400.
Yeah.
And so if I look at the red curve, it suggests that when you do not force, you have no streaks in this flow.
Yes, if you don't force, you just have the Qwert profile. Your pre-transition
number 400. But
it's a Qwert flow. Yes.
Noise,
I think the microphone business went out of the window.
so the question: when you do a DNS of Qwert flow at 400, it is turbulent. So you have streaks. Am I wrong?
Without forcing. At this channel, it's not turbulent.
What's your domain size? Do you know?
Yes, the domain size is this. It's small. It's a minimal channel.
But maybe we should take turns.
I don't know whose turn was.
Mike Graham, Wisconsin. Just to be clear, what would the DNS look like in the absence of the stochastic forcing?
At this, I should have shown the movie. It transitions It transitions to turbulent, but for higher values of the stock. For this parameter, when you don't force, you just see the Qwert flow. But if you force a bit and you cross the transition threshold, then even if you remove the forcing, it will be turbulent and it will be the flow that you know, that you are familiar with.
Oh, sorry. Steve Tobias, University of Leeds. I think just a comment. We should give credit to Bill Young, your boss. And
yeah, of course. I forgot to put references.
Who first did the calculation about the turbulent state. It's always good to give credit to your boss. Second question is, nobody would be happier than me if CE2, SST always worked. But could you comment on when you think it might not work?
So if you make a zonal average, and if you are let me show you the three examples. Where are they? So if you're in a regime that this kind of flows emerge, okay, and you insist in making a decomposition of a zonal mean and the rest. So apparently you will not, since these structures do not have a zonal mean, you will consider these structures as part of the turbulence, but they are not. So in this case, you would expect CE2 not to work. You will need something like GQL and GCE2 to capture this non-zonal, these mean flows with non-zonal variation.
Okay, John Gibson, University of New Hampshire. I guess that was a more general form. I was going to comment on the on. It seems to me that this really requires periodic boundary conditions.
No.
Or I mean, it's nice for the surface of a. It requires being able to take an average over some coordinate in place of time, such that you have structure in the average. And if you like that minimal Couet flow that you showed, if you let the streamways length go to up into the hundreds, you know, or thousands or tens of thousands, then those streaks are going to wander left and right, and the average is going to smear out to zero, and everything will be in the fluctuations.
Perhaps I was not clear, but yes, in the examples I took a streamways average, but you can do the same things taking a Reynolds decomposition into small and larger scales. So and also, despite the streaks meandering, because we evolve the statistics, we evolve the mean flow and the second order statistics, the statistics will follow the meandering of the jets. So yes, it's not clear from here, but you can have a description even if the streaks are meandering, and there are several papers that can show you that. I mean, we did the same thing in a channel in a Reynolds tau number 1000, and I mean the streaks go all over the place there. But still, you can have you don't have zero. You don't have zero first moment.
Short box.
What? It was a short box. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So if you have a short, short box, and that you're doing a spatial average over a smaller box than the computational domain.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat? Yes. You're doing a small.
If your spatial average is no longer over the entire computational domain, is that true?
Yeah.
Then you have fluxes on the boundaries of that box on which you're computing the mean, right? You have stuff coming in and out of the boundaries. The average over the average domain.
I don't really understand what you
okay,
mean.
Okay.
But we can discuss later.
Brad Marston from Brown, just a comment on your question. So you can still do this cumulative expansion in cases where there's no zonal symmetry, and then one is faced with doing an ensemble average, but the computational cost is much greater in that case, because then the second order statistic doesn't have translational invariance, so it just becomes a much more expensive calculation.
And also, I think Denise has done similar things, you know, by extending the box, making a box larger and larger and larger, right?
We do a 96 pi box with this average, and it doesn't go to zero. That's not infinite.
That's not infinite, but I think it satisfies people. It's not my miniature boxes, right? It doesn't satisfy Javier, no.
Tobias Schneider, Lausanne. So, I'm still a little bit confused about the whole methodology. So I understand, I mean, once you get your mean and your equations for the mean and all the moments, I understand how you analyze that.
Uh-huh.
But is it completely obvious that this cumulative expansion really converges in some reasonable sense? Or can I a priori kind of say how far I have to go? I mean, of course you can kind of check in hindsight whether it worked, but how do I know how far do I have to get?
Okay, so when you mean converge, you mean converge to the reality or converge to a positive definite PDF statistics?
Well, converge in the sense that, you know, if I take the next moment, I don't get anything new. So I'm approaching sort of the dynamics of the full PDF.
Yeah. I don't know if you can know this a priori, but yes, if you take the next moment, you will get the differences from that. I think it's nothing, right, in this case. You cannot know that a priori. But I am arguing that in cases that you have strong anisotropic and large-scale mean flows, then second-order closure is enough to capture the dynamics. And usually even capture quantitatively. But the structure of the flow.
But that's sort of experience, or this is a trial.
Yes, there is work showing that this is essentially the, yeah, I cannot, I don't have an analytic, rigorous mathematical proof for that. But, yes.
Oh, I just want, Dwight Barclay, University work. Just could you comment on, can you deal with non-additive noise? I mean, all your noise is
multiplicative.
For example, I mean something that would come from. Yes.
Yeah, I haven't done any work in multiplicative noise. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Javier Jiménez from Madrid. I mean, I have a comment. First, one comment on this question of going to zero when in very long boxes. Nothing will go to zero. It will go to zero like 1 over the length, over the square root of the length. But that's because of the average. You just take an average. The average of something will not go to zero. That decays. I mean, is that what happens?
I haven't checked.
Okay. Well, but I mean, and then I have a real question. I mean, when I listen to this, what I think is the same talk given by Brian Farrell, he makes a big point about this parametric instability, where time is important.
Yeah.
But you're speaking about fixed points. There's no time. Is that, are you speaking about the same thing or is it a different thing?
Okay, to predict the emergence of these structures, I'm talking about a fixed point. And, but if you're going to address the self-sustaining cycle in the channel flow, then I'm not talking about any fixed points. Then then the parametric instability is what's driving the energy flowing from the streaks to the perturbations, so that they can go to the roses.
So then you're speaking about two different processes.
Yes.
One that has to do with your forcing, and if you take away the forcing, then you are left with parametric instability.
Yes, if you are above the transition point, and if you are in the turbulent regime. Yes, this method does not only address one problem. You can address many problems.
But then, I mean, that bifurcation point that you have there is parametric instability or forcing?
No, That's the forcing. Whatever I showed today, it was the bifurcation parameter was the forcing intensity.
And then from that branch, you can go down to forcing zero.
Yeah.
Which is the parametric
instability. Yeah. Yeah. It's further down. It's further down in this bifurcation diagram.
But it's still the same equation.
It's the same dynamics, yes. Yes.
The same equation.
My statistical state dynamics equation can have fixed points, which bifurcate to finite amplitude fixed points with mean flows, which then can bifurcate to limit cycles and then can become chaotic and turbulent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
I can ask one because I'm slightly confused by that. Oh, Rich Kurzel, Bristol.
Yeah.
I'm slightly confused by that answer. When you talk about parametric instability, is it within the structural stability framework?
Yes.
So then you're talking about a periodic base state with a mean flow as your base state to do stability around?
No, my base state is just the streamwise mean flow at each instant.
Right. So
you don't do any stability there. There's no stability there. But if you are in a turbulent regime, yes? No.
Well, I'm trying to work out what parametric instability means. What's parametric in the sense that
my mean flow is time dependent.
It is time dependent.
If not the ones I showed. Yeah. If I go up beyond the threshold, the transition point, it becomes that time dependent, and this time dependence brings out the parametric instability.
Oh, so this is way beyond your bifurcation.
Yeah. I didn't talk about these things here.
So this is much higher up.
Yeah, it's much higher up, and Javier has heard these talks, and then he brought it up. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, I've heard the same talk, so I'm very interested.
Yeah, that's even. it's even further down this diagram. I think it happens at 10 or 6. I think at 6. We have the transition to a limit cycle, and then even further down to a turbulent regime.
But that's forcing.
That's forcing, yes.
You're speaking now about something that was forcing was to zero.
But if you go to a turbulent regime, then it stays turbulent even if you turn off the forcing. And then what makes this energy going around from streaks to perturbations to rolls to streaks and so on is the parametric instability.
And Javier Jimenez again. But then, okay, then it's not further down, it's a different branch. Further down in Reynolds number or further down in amplitude, but it's not in that plot, correct?
Yeah, okay, you can obtain transition if you increase the forcing amplitude. Yeah. And in that sense, it's further down the transition. This is what I mean by transition being further down. But as soon as you're turbulent, then even if you remove your forcing, the flow will remain turbulent. This is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yes, then it goes away from this branch. This is what you mean, probably.
I think we should thank Navid one more time. And there's a break now, and we reconvene at 11:00.